podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi there and welcome to the This Is Ibrox podcast live on Wednesday. I think I speak for everybody here when I can say let's get this international break over and done with already. I don't even know if there's been a game played in the international calendar, but I'm sick of it already. As always, I'm joined by two fantastic guests. Kieran, actually feels like it's been a few Wednesdays since you and I have been on. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. It certainly does. Have you missed me?
Yeah. Have you not noticed by all the texts you've been getting on the Wednesdays from me and all the voice messages and stuff?
Mate, you know what they say, absence makes a heart grow fonder.
That's it, and I can't wait to get back to Ibrox. And Ian, how's yourself?
All good, yes. Favourite night of the week because of this podcast. So yes, ready to go.
There you go. And I know you've had an early one after that Man United announcement this morning. You've been up buzzing and texting everybody about how excited you are going to that game. But listen, as always, there's loads to talk about and we will try and talk about as much Rangers as possible. We'll get the guys' thoughts on the Rangers players away in international duty. I'm slightly biased in that. Apart from the big tournaments, I don't really give a hoot about international football. We'll get what the guys' thoughts on that. There's been some interesting chat that Wolves would be opening to selling Fabio Silva. Get the guys' thoughts on that, what do you think about that as well. Obviously, we just mentioned there that there's a glamour friendly in Edinburgh, of all places, against Man United. The rearranged game with Dundee, the SPFL statement, we'll get into that as well. Maybe saw a comment that Georgie Hadji, I totally forgot that Yaris was even at Rangers. So we'll maybe get to that as well. And the final question, leave your comments there about who you think will step up for Rangers until the end of the season for this title running. First of all, I'll talk about the international break. As I've already said, I don't enjoy international football. I just see it as pointless. I think Rangers have released that they have 8 players away in international duty this week. Kieran, I'll come to you first on this. It's a really, really simple question, and I'll caveat this by starting off saying I'm not saying Rangers don't send your players away in international duty, but is being called up, you know, all it's cracked out to be. What's your thoughts up on Rangers players going on international duty?
I think you've got to look at it from the player's point of view. Like, that has got to be the biggest honour of basically being a football player and getting called up for your country and playing. Like, I can see it. I know we're big Rangers fans and a lot of times we see things through blue-tinted specs, but if you were a player, like, there could be no bigger honour than getting called up for your country, especially with a major tournament round the corner. But looking at it from the other side, I think there's benefits to guys not being called up, and we've benefited from it a lot, and I think we will benefit from it. The likes of James Tavernier, Connor Goldson being the quickest player to 300 games for Rangers, John Lundstrom, these guys aren't getting called up, they're not picking up injuries, and a wee bonus maybe that Butland didn't get called up, the fact that he's going to be fit, he's going to be healthy and fresh for when we come back for the biggest point in our season, and these guys have got to be ready to go. So, like I say, there is a good side to it in terms of the sort of high-flying English players that we've got at the moment. So it's good to see these guys rested. But I really can't grudge the guys that are away in international duty, especially the ones that are competing in teams that are going to be in the Euros come the summer. So, no, good on them, but I get the sentiment that it's boring as hell during these weeks, and especially when it's friendlies, it's not even competitive. Like, I'm not one of these folk that turn a blind eye to the national team. I'm a Scotland fan too, so the fact that it's friendlies, even when friendlies keep an interest, really, is it? So we're quite, but on the whole, we're quite happy it's an international break. Our players needed a rest, like a team I'd never ever seen. When I think back to the 08 season when we went to the UEFA Cup final, and then Under Gilman, we went to Europa League final. The players were tired. They were legging. We lost the league in both seasons there, especially the 08 one. We were fully in the driver's seat of that one. So I'm quite happy to see this international break in a sense without any European football afterwards.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I see both sides, you know, of it in terms of it's good to get these guys in the shop window, so to speak. You know, players are at peak. Oh God, I hate the amount of buzzwords I've mentioned already, but their peak value, you know, when they're on display, not even playing for their club in these international tournaments. But you know, Ian, for me, I just look at it as in terms of whenever we, it tends to be whenever we send players away on international duty. I couldn't tell you the last time we had a full roster of players coming back that weren't injured. The big one for me this season was Abdullah Sima going away with Senegal over at the African Cup of Nations. Didn't even play for them and is still out injured. Ryan Jack seems to be perpetually injured every time he goes away with Scotland. What's your thoughts on it? Is it all it's cracked up to be?
I think I'm going to go more on your side with this. See, I wish we were a bit more cynical with it. And I think the best two examples of who do it best are Man City and Liverpool. I think over the years you've noticed that there's always a wee star player or two who just gets a little niggle or a wee strain or just something on the eve of a friendly game, of international friendly. They just miss the tournament or miss the game, sorry. De Bruyne, for example, is out for Belgium's game. Pretty certain he'll be back in the Man City squad for their next league game. I think the problem we have, but is obviously we've got like 7 or 8 guys away. But all of them aren't exactly regulars for the international team. Like you look at Suter, he's going to want to go and put on a good show so that he's starting at the Euros. Ridvan's, I don't think he was in the squad initially and get drafted in. So again, same idea. He's going to need to go and try and impress. Dessers isn't exactly first choice for Nigeria. I don't think he went to AFCON. He was in the discussion but never went kind of thing. So all these guys do have something to play for. I guess McCausland, I saw one in the comments and I agree with it. McCausland wasn't fit enough to go. So why did he even try and go kind of thing? I think he went and got sent away and they're now going to see if he's fit for the game in Glasgow. But that one's just a bit daft for me. And maybe Fabio Silva was going away with under-21s. Could we have withdrew that in some way, I'd have hoped. But yeah, I get Kieran's point. It is spot on. You want these guys to be playing international football. It's what they'll be wanting to do. How great must it be to represent your country kind of thing. But if I could see Suter sitting on his arse for 2 weeks, I would much rather see that than sitting, possibly getting injured. Like, same idea with the rest of the guys. Like I just think they could have all done with a good rest here, and now we're not going to get that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you've said there. I think we'll need to get the TII lawyers, give them a wee phone call, make sure we've not upset anybody at Liverpool or Man City there. But yeah, I totally get what you mean. It is, it's these bigger clubs are the very big clubs in the Premier League, I should say, they're smart with it. And it's, okay, I know De Bruyne was out for a large part of the season, but surely your key assets, you've got to be protecting them. But then again, it's really difficult to say to an international or a player who has been called up for the country, you know, maybe sit this one out, because you know, we're paying your wages here. But yeah, I can see both sides to the story. And you go, Kieran.
Yeah, I was going to say, think about the Morelos one back when he came off against Dundee and then we sent him away with Colombia, comes back and he's out for the season. If that doesn't happen, we win a Europa League. I don't care what anybody says. We win that with a fit Morelos up front.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most frustrating one for me. And Ian's bang on. Like, I think in that occasion, we should have been a lot cuter about it. Just look, he's come off against Dundee, carrying a thigh injury. We're going to keep him here and rehab the injury. And that wins us a Europa League and potentially the league.
Yeah, oh man, I was trying to start this podcast off on a sort of positive note there, but Andy Anderson of this parish, that's what caught me off guard there. He says, ban international football, it's a load of push. I find it hard to disagree with him there. But look, there's one wee question I just want to, I'll come to you, Ian, for this one. It's just because it's about football as a whole. The Mohamed Diomande situation obviously has eligibility to play for Ghana through, I think he was there for 5 years in the Aspire Academy. They've cheekily quite named him in their squad for their upcoming friendlies, but then the Ivory Coast under 23 team have also named him in their squad for the upcoming friendlies. What do you think about that from a football point of view? Is that just Ghana trying to pull a fly one? Can you respect that a bit?
I think the best thing to do for Diomande here is to reject both and just stay at home for a bit. Have a good think about what he wants to do long term there. I don't know. It's a weird one. Like I said, I don't think any of us had any idea he was linked to Ghana or had that like eligibility. We obviously saw him in the training videos, all the Ivory Coast flags and stuff like that. So if he wants to go and play right now, Ghana's probably a better shout. I'm not too clued up on their midfield, but I can't think of anyone that stands out. I know they've got Kudos, the West Ham boy, who's obviously brilliant, but I don't think he'd be fighting him for a spot, whereas Ivory Coast team just won AFCON, probably a bit harder to get into longer term. But yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, because I don't think it's not been confirmed if he's joined up with either of those just yet. I don't know if he's going to try and split himself in two to do that, but yeah, he's an only one of the ones that I think really does need a rest. And all of this, I mean, you look at guys like Lundstrom, Tav, Goldson, as Kieran said, they're not going anywhere, so they're going to get that proper rest. He's next in line for me, that he's one of, I'm not going to come on to what like we're talking about later in terms of who's the most important for the run-in here, but he's going to be pretty key. And if he, you know, touch wood, if he does get a kind of injury or a little knock playing for either of these nations, then we're suddenly relying on a few guys coming in for the cold, so... I don't know. I hope he maybe goes and just sees what Ghana's like, gets used to his teammates and stuff, maybe sits a couple of games on the bench, but let's just pray that he doesn't get any injuries for this.
Yeah, no, the way Diomande plays at times, it almost is like there's two of them on the pitch, so you never know. There might be one of them in the Ghana squad and the Ivory Coast squad as well. But a wee couple of comments here. RFC72 says, this is the only international break I'm glad for. Get some players back, some up to speed, and then on we go. And Paul McGarrigle here says, club should always have the say in whether players go or not, which is interesting. Kieran, the next point I'll come on to here, Fabio Silva mentioned it a wee bit at the start there, and he's a guy who I definitely think we'll talk about later on in terms of who will step up for Rangers towards the end of the season. Talking Wolves, they put out this tweet. Wolves are reportedly planning to sell Fabio Silva this summer. It is said that Wolves will demand at least $15 million for the Portuguese striker who is currently on loan at Rangers. Ignoring the fee for the minute, and I know that's a pretty mental thing to say, given that... It's quite a large part of the football transfer is how much the person costs. But see a guy you would like to see kept on at Rangers next year?
100%, but just not in that capacity. Would I spend $15 million on him? I know you said ignore it. No, if I wasn't to spend $15 million on him, would I give him $80,000 a week in wages that's reported? Probably not either. But that doesn't take away the fact that I think he's going to have a real strong finish to the season for us. Ibrox against Benfica, I thought it was very quiet. They'd done a good job on him. Previous game, the away leg over in Lisbon, I thought it was tremendous. I thought he had an excellent game. And then after that, again, I thought it was brilliant. So it looks like he's coming onto a game, being on that left-hand side. It looks more of a comfortable position for him, where he likes to sort of go at players and pull the ball in and influence the game a wee bit more before he gets into that number nine position. But if you were to say to me, right, the budget, you can buy one of Abdallah Sima and Fabio Silva, I'd bite the hand off Abdallah Sima for you.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. There's a few wee comments coming on here. Callum C says it's too much. Malky McLaren says we will not be paying that kind of money. And KW says half that. You know, it's interesting. Rangers did some clever deals, shall we say, over the January transfer window there, Ian. There's no chance in hell that we'll put anything like £15 million towards a transfer. But if a deal was structured, you know, where it was paid in installments type thing, you know, he's a young player, somebody obviously Niels Coppens worked with in the past. Could you see this, you know, happening? Is it just pie in the sky stuff?
I was tweeting about this morning that I think it does have potential. I'm going to get proper like Football Manager in my head here, but if we can get some kind of deal where it's like a season-long loan, which we're paying a fee for, say £2-3 million, right? Not too much, but player quality is going to cost a fair bit. And then you've got a kind of optional add-on at the end of that, maybe a £7-8 million. And then you talked about it, add-ons. And if he does have a good season or two for us, he could easily double in that value, especially if that's like Champions League. If he gets like recognised, maybe an international call-up kind of thing, suddenly he's worth 20 million easily. And if we've got a sell on that, same idea as Celtic had with Jota for with Benfica, that sort of same numbers we're talking, then I can see Wolves doing that. I mean, the thing for us is, as you say, we're not paying 15 million. That's not happening. We're not paying double figures million for anybody.
No.
His wages are maybe 80 grand a week as well. So not quite sure how we're doing it right now, to be honest. I don't know what kind of strange dealings we've pulled with them over January there. But the thing is, I don't see any club paying 15 million for Silva. I don't see any club paying £80,000 a week for Silva. So it's all well and good Wolves putting out that kind of feelers like, oh, we want 15 million. Any club's going to do that, but who realistically is going to pay that? I know he done quite well at PSV and they're going to have some money kicking about, so they might be willing to pay towards that. But as far as you see from him, it looks like he's enjoying it up here. All the comments, the wee little press releases he's given seems to be that he's loving it. If he does end the season with a treble and he sort of fires his way or does his bit there to get us there, I can see us doing all that we can to try and keep him for at least another year. And if he does stay for another year, develops, then Wolves might see that as more of a smart move from them business-wise to not lose, what was it, 35 million they paid for him kind of thing. So they're going to make a massive loss either way. But I just don't see anyone paying the kind of money that they're talking about initially. So that might bode well for us.
See, the thing is, if you're Silva, right? This is no disrespect if we've got any Wolves fans listening or anything like that, right? But he must be absolutely loving it here, right? The fans here are unbelievable. That's not to say the Wolves fans are poor, but we're very recognised for having a very lovable fan base that kind of, we just, I don't know, when players come here, they just tend to love it, and Silva's no different in England. But this is the thing, in England, he's probably received a big, big payday, a young age, going to Wolves with a massive transfer fee, big wages, no doubt a massive signing on bonus for what, mid-table mediocrity, and your goal each season is to beat relegation. Then you come to Rangers, you're competing for a treble, you're in the last 16 of the Europa League, playing against a team that dumped you when you were younger, basically, and turning in a man of the match performance. So it's no wonder he's loving it here. And I think it bodes well for Rangers in that sense as well, that a guy of his stature and his transfer fee is saying how much he loves it and how good a club we are and how good a fan base. So, like Ian says, get him back in for another year next year on loan, I think that would be our best bet.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. It was just, Ian was giving me severe flashbacks there by, or PTSD, by mentioning that PSV might come in and take another bloody loan player that's that we've got and might buy them from underneath us. But yeah, a few of the comments, or quite a lot of the comments, are agreeing with you both there. Donald here says, I'm not sure Silva has done enough for that cash, which I think's fair. Callum C says, Brighton will want around the same for Sima too. We need to look elsewhere. RFC72 says, straight swap for right for Fabio Silva. I was actually thinking Sam Lammers could go there, seeing as he's apparently smashing it with Utrecht over in Holland. So yeah, we'll see what's going on there. Right, the next point we'll come on to, obviously we knew that the game at the weekend was postponed due to a waterlogged pitch. The SPFL released a statement on the 18th of March, and Ian, I'll get your thoughts on this, because I find it quite interesting that the SPFL decided to release a statement for this. It says, an SPFL spokesperson said, the postponement of any match is disappointing, given the impact it has on supporters. This was particularly disappointing, given the fact it was a live Sky Sports match and the proximity of the match to the split. The SPFL will be investigating the circumstances surrounding this postponement. First of all, what do you make of that statement? And secondly, do you think anything will be done, and should it be done?
It definitely should. I think that the key thing here is this was supposed to be like the big game of the weekend in Scottish football from a Sky perspective. Like, they're going to look at it the same way, like sort of Clement was commenting after it got called off. But there was one game in the whole of like professional British football over the weekend that got called off. Just isn't good enough. Isn't good enough. The late call off, the whole sort of circus around that as well, that's not going to make anyone look good from a Dundee perspective. And it just sort of goes back to the whole, like, it's a bit of a tin pot situation. Really, this wouldn't happen in the English Premiership, obviously. It just wouldn't happen. Yet that's what, the fourth time Dundee have had a game called off this season. Second at the last minute. I mean, I think Aberdeen and other fans had travelled down as well, which is kind of funny for them, to be honest. But from a bigger perspective, that's just not good enough. Again, I think the comms thing is quite a big part of this as well. The fact that Rangers had to find out through their own kit man when he arrived, that's again just, it's just unprofessional, for want of a better phrase. It's just not good enough. And I can imagine someone in Sky has had a word with the SPFL to release this kind of statement and try and clamp down on it. I don't see why they would have released that statement otherwise. And it shows that they are actually doing something about it, hopefully. So, yeah, it's such a stupid Scottish football thing, but we should be used to these by now.
Yeah, Sharpie Staunch, and I've been practicing that name all day, by the way, so I get that right. Says, apparently it's the fifth time this season it's happened at Dundee. You should be warned that anymore they are forfeiting the match. It would be incredible from a footballing point of view if that actually happened, but something needs to be done about it, clearly. Kieran, I think this is the moment. I know you and I were messaging earlier on in the day, and you're wanting to talk about the state of Scottish football as a whole, and this was a part of it. In terms, I think Ian's used the correct word, the word we've seen a lot on social media, and it's totally tin pot, isn't it? So listen, if you want to take it away for the next 10-20 minutes, you can get on your soapbox and we'll wind you up and let you go, all right?
I'll accept five, but this is just the tip of the iceberg for me for the past, few weeks, that Scottish football just really needs a major shake-up. In terms of, you look at what's happened in the past few weeks, the stuff with VAR and the referees being part-time, and now the head of refereeing, Crawford Allen, has left by mutual consent. That's got to be someone from the outside coming in and it's operated at a top level. Like, it can't be somebody that's going to lead to conspiracies and all the rest of it. And we need to move in the direction of getting full-time referees. Now, I've never known a product, especially one like Scottish football, that doesn't want to improve and doesn't want to get better. And by the governance above, it's just a kind of old man social club where they're all looking after each other and looking after their positions. There needs to be a major shake-up. We've got no sponsor for the league. The television deal is one of the worst I've ever seen, and we're so far behind. We had an opportunity to scrap the 3 p.m. blackout, and we didn't take it. Now, how are you going to improve a product if, one, you can't get it out there in front of people, in front of the viewers? And if I'm right in saying per capita in Scotland, our viewership and interest in football is one of the best in Europe.
Yep.
So you attract a bigger audience, you get bigger sponsors, you generate more money. Now, I look at teams across Europe and say, take for example the Eredivisie. That seems so further forward than Scotland, but we're almost at the same level in terms of how competitive it is, in terms of the structure, everything. They seem so much further advanced in terms of scrapping plastic pitches, contributing, is it 3.75% of European money into the actual game there, which covers things like VAR and their pitches. Like, why are we not doing things like this? I remember the early 2000s when we had some of the best players around Europe playing for Rangers and Celtic, matching wages of the Premiership, and we kind of get near it now. I know that's sort of pie in the sky stuff and we're miles, but we're falling behind. Things as well, like reducing fan allocations. There's got to be a rule that it's like, I don't care if you're Rangers, you're Celtic, you're St. Johnstone, you're Motherwell. Here's what you have to offer your away fans. If you don't sell this amount for your home fans, then there's a suggestion that you can sell even more or you shouldn't be cutting allocation. Like, why should the fans miss out again? I get that fans misbehave and there is a behaviour in the culture of fans in Scotland, but do you know what that comes from? The governing body not hammering teams when their fans don't behave. Like, we've seen it in Europe, right? And admittedly so, I don't hear as much sectarian singing, if any, on European nights now because we get hammered for it and we were right to be hammered for it. It's just the product itself, even like the Viaplay, I don't know any set of fans that doesn't moan about guys like Michael Stewart and Stephen Craigan commentating on our games. You look at bigger sports around the world, their commentators and their broadcast journalists get paid a fortune because it adds to the product. You watch games with, I could watch any game of football and Stephen McCoy's, Towsley, even Darren Fletcher are commentating. I enjoy it that wee bit more, and that's what makes the product better. You even look at us during the COVID season, like we had like guys like Souness, Towsley, like Walter Smith even in the studio, and like it made the product so much better. We're eating ourselves alive in Scotland and it's only getting worse. And for me, this whole pitch debacle is just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I was involved in amateur football for years and I still keep an eye on it. And even at the weekend, I didn't see a single amateur football game on a council pitch fucking called off. And the only reason that the SFA have took action, right, and you guys can disagree with me if you want, do you think we're reading that statement there if this game isn't live on Sky? Harry Hill is going to respond to whenever they want because they just bow down to some tin pot club like Dundee that have had four games called off, whose bus broke down at Parkhead and had to get a lift to the stadium, and they've been late for kickoffs this year. I mean, come on, are we going to start taking Scottish football serious and get it to the levels it should be? It's just, it's about time there was just massive change at the top. And I think I'm running out of breath now. I could be here all night.
That's fine. I was just hoping you were going to keep going into the end of the show there, to be honest with you, Kieran. But no, I totally agree with you. You do raise some really, really good points in that. And before we move on, Ross here, I said, tell us how you really feel, Kieran. But it's totally fair because it's just, I mean, even people that I know, you know, pals that, you know, are abroad and are, you know, down in England and all that stuff are just like, man, rain must have been really bad up there if your game's getting called off and you're just like, no, it's just because it's a joke. It's like, yeah, you can't even defend it. That's the difficult thing about it as well. But
see, honest, you know, but like, sorry to jump in really, but see, like, obviously Dundee's argument here is that the pitch is beside the quarry overfills and that then leads to the stadium and then it's waterlogged. What can they do, kind of thing? I don't really see how this gets better. To go, I don't see the investment coming. I don't see a big new fancy Sky deal coming in. Kind of thing. They're just going to kind of cheap out as always on us. Like, is there a market there for Scottish football the way it currently stands? And I don't think there is really. I don't know if you guys think there is, and there's some kind of other company that's going to come in and kind of save the day. But I worry how we get to that level. Like to get all these sort of. These 10 other clubs, basically, how do you get them the money to make them better, make their facilities better, make their players better, make the league better? Where's that going to come from?
Is there an argument for that TV deal being that bad that would it be really sort of worth taking the chance that we're self-sufficient and we sell our own rights to the games and on a subscription basis where it's online? I think we're at a day and age now where we could do that. I know that Roger Mitchell suggested this before he left the SPL setup years ago, but I don't think we were in a time and place then where streaming subscriptions and packages were that common or advanced that we could. But is it a time that sort of we, in essence, want a cliche, lead the revolution in the way that we become the first league that do this and we come up with a structure where fans can buy? I know that the whole argument is the 3 p.m. kickoff stuff and people selling their own rights is people have stopped going to games. That there's American sports where is it 72 hours before kickoff, if you've not sold a certain percentage of your tickets, then you're not allowed to sell the rights of the game. So if you've sold, say, 75% of your tickets that are available, then you're well within your rights to sell the rights of your game because you know you've sold the tickets. Like, we've got to be forward thinking, and it's just a million miles per mile. Yeah, I'm getting tongue twisted. I'm just.
I don't know what you mean.
You get what I mean. We need to be more forward thinking. We're stuck in the dark ages in Scotland. And talk about TV deals. Why would you spend your money, or a lot of money, if you're a TV or a broadcaster in Scottish football when things like Dundee happen at the weekend? Why would you?
Yeah. No. That's it exactly. There's a couple of comments coming in here. Paul McGarrigle here says, our coefficient money for clubs should be deducted if a game is called off for a bad pitch. You know, that's it's a financial punishment. I'd never heard of that, what you just suggested there, Kieran, in terms of, you know, a certain amount, a percentage of the tickets have to be sold for you to actually be able to sell the rights 72 hours. I think that's a fantastic idea. I really, really do. I never thought I'd be saying that in a This Is Ibrox podcast, by the way. then the other thing that I quite like, and it might cause a wee bit of controversy, is I know that in the Eredivisie that got mentioned before, that, you know, they have ring-fenced money from their Champions League or European qualifications and filter it down to the lower, the clubs lower down the division, so that they don't have artificial pitches, so that they do have good pitches. That might be an idea, but is there enough money floating about in Scottish football where, let's face it, it's going to be the Old Firm? Are they going to agree to something like that? I'm not sure. And maybe, you know, there's a lot of history going on between a lot of clubs and Rangers. So would the fans be opening to literally giving cash to a Dundee so that they have a half decent playing surface? I don't know. But listen, we'll move on. Ian, this did start by talking about the state of that Dundee pitch. Obviously, Sky Sports, they had a wee tweet out earlier on today that I saw. And it was that the Dundee v Rangers fixer has been rescheduled for the 10th of April, live on Sky Sports. Interestingly enough, I think that's a Champions League night as well. I'm quite glad. I always used to, obviously you watch Champions League games, but it's always nice if Rangers aren't they participating in it. It's not a bad thing having Rangers on a Wednesday night as well. But what do you make of this fixture being rescheduled for, in particular after the Old Firm game on the 7th?
Yeah, I couldn't have placed it better myself, to be honest. My big fear here was that it was going to be in between those games, and then we've got a game, what, 3-4 days before the Old Firm. I think we all know we would see like a Cantwell leg break or something in that game if that was to happen. So the fact it's pushed back, we've got then Ross County at the weekend, a few days after Dundee. On paper, a much nicer fixture if you can sort of rotate and swap a couple of players in, a couple of players out. It's ideal. So, yeah, only positives to say about that for once, and delighted with it, to be honest.
Yeah, and Kieran, your thoughts on it? Does it matter when this game was played? Are you like Ian? Are you pretty delighted that it has been shifted to post Old Firm?
Yeah, Ian's bang on the money there. Post Old Firm, 100%. I did have a fear that it would be the Wednesday before the Old Firm, and given the state of our squad and the fact that we've needed this international break rest, you then run the risk of suspensions, injuries, and we become at a slight disadvantage to Celtic there. This is arguably going to be our biggest game of the season. There's no doubt about it, and it could very well be a title decider, depending on how we got on against Hibs and they got on away to Livingston. So, yeah, delighted it's afterwards, and hopefully we're rolling into plenty of confidence off the back of a good win against Hibs. I remember years back, was it the game that Boyd scored 5? There was the Bagheera World Day against Dundee United midweek, and then all of a sudden Kenny Mallard gets sent off for missing for him against our greatest rivals. And I was having flashbacks of that, thinking that this game could be midweek against another team for Dundee.
Yeah. That's it. It's all very interesting. But yeah, I'm in total agreement with the two of you. I'm thrilled that it's actually post Old Firm, and we don't have to worry about players getting leathered, because you can just guarantee it is dodgy pitch, dodgy inbox as well, up in Dundee. I won't say any more on that, or we'll have to mention the TII lawyers again. Look, the other interesting news that came out today, and I'll stick with you here on this, Kieran, was there was a pre-season friendly announced through all official channels. I know Rangers are playing Man United. I can't remember the date exactly. It's 20th of July. Sorry, I've got it written down here. At Murrayfield, interestingly enough. I think that's largely due to the fact that, you know, Rangers are renovating Ibrox. There's going to be 600 extra seats, I think, put in. And obviously they're looking to add more spaces in the wheelchair users area. The cheapest ticket that on the email that everybody got, a bar Ian, was but I could see was but was 37 quid. Having a look on the Ticketmaster website, I think the cheapest one I could see was 45, and that wasn't including all the, you know, the ticket booking fees, the fees that will go to, you know, Murrayfield as well. But yeah, it's pretty steep for a friendly, and that's still getting to Edinburgh. What do you think about the game in particular, and what do you think about the pricing of it?
I'm gonna get up with me and say I will not be there. That seems like a hell of a lot of money, and considering from what I heard earlier that Man United's first team are the ones that will beat the Euros, which I presume will be the vast majority of that squad, are not due back in full training until the week after this friendly. So you're going to see a Rangers up against some sort of Man United reserves, and who knows, the Rangers players that go at the Euros possibly might not be back for that game either. So right out the gate, it sounds like a very drab friendly, and for that sort of price, being through Edinburgh and Murrayfield, I'm quite lucky I've got a decent enough link here. To, is it Haymarket's the one next to Murrayfield? Straight through to there. But nah, I can't see me going to this one, as much as I love going to watch Rangers everywhere. It is very, very steep. And yeah, if Harry Maguire's not going to be playing, then I'm not interested.
yeah, that's that. Ian, will you be travelling through to Edinburgh for the Amad Diallo derby?
That's bizarre. I was just about to say I'm only going for Amad Diallo. That's an absolute fanboy of the guy. I don't know. When it came out, I thought it was quite a nice of your away day. I'd take my boy through, might take the misses, but then I was toting up, and that's like £150 to watch Diallo. not too sure. I think the important thing here is, as Paul in the comments touched on there, we're like the guests here. We're the away team in a way, because Man, you have got some kind of agreement with Murrayfield or with something of that sort. That they play there once a year. It was Leon last year. They've invited us this year. So it's not like Rangers have dictated the prices here. I don't think it's more of a Man U thing.
Yeah,
that we've just been invited to. So that's kind of, I don't think it's a Rangers thing. I think we have a big part of that. What was interesting to me though is when you look at the website that we've put on like about the game, it does say it may be the only Scottish-based friendly that Rangers partake in. That might just be to try and like drive up the sales a little bit, who knows, but it does give me a bit of hope there's maybe an away UK game on the go. I've not seen that for years. I don't know why we stopped that. We've obviously seen the Sheffield Wednesday game, and like people still watch the videos of the fans that day kind of thing. So hopefully I've got one of them lined up and be a bit more inclined to go to that. But yeah, just a wee friendly game. I think it's all a bit of a riot over nothing kind of thing. It's probably a good endorsement for us. I mean, Man, you have got, what, a billion fans across the world, so if we can get a wee slice of that market, why not? It's a good wee day out for some, if you get the money for it.
A billion fans across the world, none of them in Manchester, that's the thing about
that's
it, isn't
exactly
it?
The same joke.
Well, there we go. Yeah, so there's a few comments coming in here. The Catalyst says here, couldn't care less about that Man United friendly. And to your point, I think it's to do with the renovations that are going on at the stadium. I don't think there'll be any pre-season friendlies played at Ibrox. If the work there to add the additional seating and the wheelchair user space as well. But look, we'll come on to the crux of the pot. I didn't think it would take 40 minutes to get to that, man. We've done well. So the question is who will step up for Rangers in the title race? I've got five players written down here, but I'm dead interested to see what your guys' thoughts are on it. I think out of the five I've written, three are absolute bankers. Two might be a wee bit more controversial given recent comments on, you know, some people on this pod, but especially comments that I've been reading. This guy's been getting a bit of a tough time of it lately, but I'll start with you, Kieran. It's Conor Goldson. How important will Conor Goldson be until now and for the title running?
Quite like the question, man. He's going to have to turn a wee corner form-wise. He's dipped. Again, I think we're repeating ourselves here. He's probably going to benefit the most from this break. I hope he's got about six spa days booked and he's got the feet up and the missus is looking after the kids and he's doing as little as possible. He's a massive player for us, and whether folk like it or not, and I think our fan base, or a minority of them, really enjoy having a whipping boy, regardless of who it is in our team. They always seem to have one, and Goldson's been the one that's copped it recently, but he's the leader at centre-back for us. When he's playing well, the team seem to play well, and the stats before he's sort of dipping form are very, very good, in the league especially, so he can be very important for us, but he needs a wee turn in form. He needs a big game to kick.
He's been so informed that he's frozen Kieran there, but Aldo RSE here just says, there we go. Well, Goldson sucks, and that's kind of a lot of the comments, especially I've been noticing. I think he's been his excellent self, like he has been in the previous seasons, maybe not quite up to that standard, but he has been fairly solid. Remember, there's been a lot of injuries happening in front of him this year. I'm sure, you know, he's had his own injury problems, you know, going back last season as well, that affected him. So yeah, I'm not sure, but it's in terms of his leadership qualities, I think that's where it really stands out. Ian, Connor Goldson for you.
We've conceded 16 goals in the league this season. Goldson doesn't suck. That's not happening. Not having it. He's maybe not in his best form of his career. I'll get that. He's had a couple of mistakes, and I can see the kind of narrative. We need a whipping boy. He's kind of one of the easiest ones to go for, but he's still like the first name of the team sheet for me, kind of thing. He's vital. If you look at who comes in, if he does happen to step out, I don't really trust Balogun to play like multiple games, and then you're talking about guys like Ben Davies or something coming in. It's just not on. So Goldson is vital for this team. And as Kieran says, if he's got a wee spa day or two lined up, it's only going to do him and us the world of good.
Yeah, totally agree there. Joe 90 here says Ibrox Noise are blaming Lundstrom. He's no Ryan Jack for sure. Goldson does suck though. He's a ball watcher. That brings me on to my next player nicely, and I'll stick with you here, Ian. John Lundstrom, the man that's been like a butterfly. He's totally transformed under, and I bet you that's the first time he's ever been called a butterfly. I'll wait for the comments coming in on that one. But he's been totally transformed under Philippe Clement, a guy I thought was, you know, if you'd have told me, you know, that couple of months leading up to that January transfer window that he was off ski, I'd have said bye-bye to him. But he's been, arguably for me, the most important player in our squad since Clement's come in.
Yeah, I don't even think he was that bad under Beal, to be honest. I don't think he was one of the ones that were as poor as the rest, kind of thing. I thought he was okay. But as you say, since Clement's came in, he's became like Clement's guy, kind of thing. He's just centre of everything, dictating the play, a couple of assists here and there. He's been a major player. I think the big problem, though, is that we have sort of ran him into the ground a little bit. And you saw away in Benfica, and then the game just after, he just looks knackered, kind of thing. He looks like he probably more than anyone needs a rest, needs a wee 2-week break just to reset, recharge, and go again. But John Lundstrom, playing for his future, playing for a contract, whether that's here or somewhere else, full of motivation. I think one thing that he did say in an interview a couple of months back now was that he's a bit regretful of how little he's actually won up here, considering he's played every week, he's played in a lot of big games at this point, he's played in finals. I think he's got, what, two or three winners' medals kind of thing. He's going to want to end, if he is ending his career, which, I mean, I don't want him to be, but you never know. If he's not getting the money and the year on his contract that he's going to want, he's not going to stick around. So he's going to want to end on a high. I think he, like, just sort of repeating myself, but a couple of weeks rest here. I'm hoping he comes back flying and drives us on to a couple more trophies this year.
Yeah, a couple of comments here. Sharpie Staunch says, before Clement came in, Lundstrom had a first touch like a snooker table cushion. And Nicola Stubbins says, Lundstrom is streets ahead of Raskin, somebody who I definitely want to come on and talk about later. If we drop Lundstrom for Raskin, then we will win no more trophies. You think John Lundstrom will be a key player for us in this title run in, Kieran?
110%. He's been phenomenal since Clement came in. And Ian was right, he wasn't that bad under Beal. I just felt he was a wee bit passive, maybe. He was in that Borna Barisic mode where he just loved to pass to the centre-backs or side to side. And Yeah, there was too much lateral, and I think when Clement came in, and I think in the pod we spoke about who would be the players that would benefit from that the most. And remember hearing the quotes from Clement after that first game against Hibs, or just before that in the presser, I think it was, where he spoke about he wants players to take risks and pass the ball forward, and when the pass is on, to sort of break defences down to take it. And Lundstrom's the one that's benefited from that the most. I really, really hope he stays next year. In terms of that contract situation, I don't know where the club's at with it, if we're waiting to see if we qualify for the Champions League, to see if there's funds available to give him the deal, which I thoroughly believe that he deserves. If Clement's going to be here, Lundstrom's going to be a key player for us. Now, you think to yourself, how much would it cost us to replace Lundstrom? I think at the moment it would cost a lot of money. I don't know how much he's on. I know for sure he's one of the highest earners at the club. That's for him and his agent and the club to sort it out. I know that it very much sounds like all parties want John Lundstrom to be here next season. It's whether or not they can come up with a deal. And sadly, that's football. But in terms of this season, and I like what Aldo RFC says there in the comments, we need him to turn up against Celtic. I think he's due a big performance against Celtic. And the other thing we've got to remember with Lundstrom as well is that, apart from that small blip round about New Year, I think that's the only injury he's really had since he came here. He's always fit. He's ever present.
Yeah. Don Deliver Cars here says, I wouldn't give Lundstrom a new contract. I think that's an opinion that goes against the grain. I'm surprised at that. His form, I would be throwing money at him if under this current form. But I suppose the other side of it, he's peaked and trough quite high and quite low during his Rangers career. And is that a guy we can afford to have? Maybe not, but under this form, absolutely. And RFC72 here says, Lunny was asked to do so much before Clement came in. Clement has just simplified his game and we're getting the benefits from it. And that, for me, is nail head hit it. I said there was three players that were absolute bankers for this. The other two, and I'll go to you first here, Ian, James Tavernier. How important is he going to be?
He's the key. He's the man. He's everything to me, and he's everything to this club. He's an absolute legend already. I want Rangers to win trophies for myself, but for Tav just as much. I hate the kind of negativity around him, the loser thing that he gets branded with, the disappointment video you see every fucking 6 months. But he's so key, not only like in terms of like the goals he scores, assists he gets, but I think his defending has come on so much just in the last like sort of 6 months or so. I mean, you saw against Benfica, the amount of sort of good positions he got into, like stop attacks or to be that last ditch defender kind of thing. I don't remember Tav ever getting those sort of comments for his defending. So that's massive. And then I think this new sort of thing we've seen a little bit is this like inverted way that he's trying to play, where he's suddenly popping up in like the centre of the park or sort of closer to Dessers than anyone else. It's just a little new dimension that we've picked up, but it's just a little sort of tactical tweak that you saw from Clement. And I don't think he's had a lot of time at this point on the training pitch to do that sort of thing. So it just sort of goes back to what the earlier point was, this 2 week break can hopefully be a chance to drum that into some of the players who are staying back a little bit more and just give us a bit of a different dimension. But yeah, Tav speaks for himself. Tav does what Tav does kind of thing, but he's massive for this club still. So he's one of the main men for sure.
Yeah, and I think I'll add to that, and I'm going to put my neck out here and say that since Clement has come in, I would say this is the best I've ever seen Tav from a defensive point of view. Yes. I know we didn't win that game against Benfica, but I thought defensively he was superb. I thought he was one of the few players for Rangers that could actually handle Rafa Silva that night. But Kieran, the next player I'll come on to for you, and I love talking about this guy. Maybe unfortunate he didn't get an England call up, but I'm glad he's not there, because that would be the most Rangers thing ever, is for Jack Butland to go get an England call up and get injured while he was on international duty. But yeah, how important is the big man going to be between the sticks for us until the end of the season?
Oh, absolutely. He is the front runner for player of the year for Rangers this year, possibly the league as well. He's been phenomenal for us. He's been a great signing. I think it's one we could maybe thank Beale for, and probably one of the only things we could thank him for in his return. and he certainly looks like a Rangers player, doesn't he? He's a big, handsome lad. I got to do his unveiling when I was lucky enough to go along for This Is Ibrox, and he was just the key, just a pure professional. He was so nice to everybody as well, and so down to earth, and just so happy to be here. And I think his love affair with the club has just grown and grown. And again, I spoke about Fabio Silva at Wolves and being down there. I think Butland sort of was in the same situation a lot of the time. Mid-table mediocrity and just stay in the league and don't get relegated. It was around clubs like that, and no disrespect to who he's been with. But in terms of Butland at Rangers, he has been phenomenal. He's been brilliant, and he's just a picture of calmness in that back line, considering how long we've been used to Alan McGregor running around like I don't know the best way to put this, like he's got Tourette's. Just screaming at defenders and screaming at refs and screaming at linesmen and volleying opposition strikers. We've now got Jack Butland. And I know a lot of people say, I hope we make a lot of money off him, but I hope he sticks around at Rangers for a long time, because as long as we've got Jack Butland and goals, I'm very confident we can win things.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, and I totally agree with you in terms of the player of the year, player of the season shout. It would be incredible for Rangers to have two goalkeepers being awarded player of the season, given that Alan McGregor was awarded that a couple of years ago, and I would find it really hard to disagree with Butland, given some of the, because his highlight reel will be spectacular at the end of the season. Right, this is where it gets a bit more controversial. Ian, you've got the next one, Cyril Dessers, and I've seen a few comments there saying our strikers need to start scoring goals. But listen, he is, for me, our only... I forgot about Kemar Roofe, but...
Oh, I was going to hit back with Roofe on you, mate. I'll let you go.
But listen, he's going to be important, because I'll change that slightly by saying he's our only fully fit central striker.
Yeah, that's a really positive thing to say, isn't it? I don't know. See, the thing with Dessers is, right, his best form for us came when he wasn't relied on. So see, when we could take him out for a game and throw on for 20 minutes or vice versa, he was getting goals from the start, he was getting goals when he came on. I don't know if it's like a pressure thing, a mentality thing, but I've never seen a player be so good at times and so like crafty and good finisher, and yet also be horrific to watch and just frustrate the life out of you. He's such a strange guy. I don't know. I'm really, my worry with this, like the way the games are going there, is I don't see goals in the front line without Seema, without Cantwell. And I think a lot of the season comes down to like Seema getting fit, and then having that chance to sort of drop Dessers and bring him back in here and play him there and give him a rest. I don't know if it's a rest thing, maybe he just runs himself into the ground too much, but I still don't like watching him. I still don't like when he's on the pitch, even though he had a little purple patch. I just don't see it coming back, which sounds incredibly negative after the conversation we've had in the last 10 minutes. But if we are starting having big games still, I'm not confident we're getting the goals in any big games. And it's going to take a lot for Cyril to bring me back on side at this point.
No, I think that's fair enough. I agree with that in terms of, I don't think I'll be disappointed if he goes at the end of the season, but he's got a big part to play. He's going to be the striker that, whether we like it or not, that we're going to be relying on the most from now until the end of the season. So everybody put your seatbelts on and strap in for the ride for that one. Going to stick with the forward areas. A player that's not actually played for us in a few months, I think he's due back either the end of this month, early April, and that is Abdullah Seema. Kieran, how important is a guy like Abdullah Seema going to be for the title running?
100%. I think it would give the fans a lift. I think it would give the team a lift. Considering how many important goals he scored, do you think Hearts away at Tynecastle, the game we won 1-0, the subliminal assist from Tavernier for Seema to slot it away, and just, he's powerful, he's probably one of the quickest players I've ever seen, he's great in the air, he's a good finisher, he's everything that we want in our number nine area. And if that's the striker that we sign at the end of the season, I will be delighted. The quicker we can get him back, the better. And I think the, if I'm right in saying we were quoted, what was it, 10 to 12 weeks it would be back. And I think we're coming into the 12th week. So I think we should expect news on that when we come back after the international break. I really hope we get the news, but I did try and butt in a wee bit and saying, I think Kamar Roof will be more important than any striker for us. And I think come the Old Firm game, and if people want to agree with me or disagree with me in the comments, I think we slide all our chips into the middle of the table and say Kamar Roof starts, and if he gets injured, so be it. But I think he's our best chance of goals in our team. And that's, for me, the Old Firm game at Ibrox is make or break. Roof's got to start 100%. Fit Seema, no fit Seema. Dessers banging five in against Hibs. I don't care. Kamar Roof has got to start that Old Firm game.
I know it's the year 2031, and Rangers fans are still calling for a partially fit Roof to be starting. Yeah, he's an interesting character. I agree with you there in terms of he scores goals, but he's just, his legs are glass. Let's face it, he's got good mentality. Really like the guy as a person and stuff like that, but it's just his body just can't handle it. And yes, it's an interesting one. Do you go and get the goals earlier, or do you wait to the end? Look, and listen, I think the last play, because I cannot believe how quickly the time has crept up on us on this podcast, but there's numerous players we could mention here. Todd Cantwell, I think, will play a huge part. Nico Raskin, I know we've already talked about him, but in terms of coming in and you know, because we've had a lot of injuries in that central midfield, if we can get him onto a game in that first 6 months that he had at Rangers, you know, I think he could be really key. Tom Lawrence, Rabi Matondo, just in terms of helping out in rotation and on the wide, the flanks, I should say. But this guy, I'm going to mention him here. It is, and Sid said it, he said, Big Dujon will be vital. Look what happened when he didn't play at Ibrox v Benfica. Come to you first, Ian, on this before we go. How important will Dujon Stirling be? Because for me, he could be one of the most important players.
Yeah, I think there's two kind of main reasons for me why he is so vital. In terms of him himself, like the ability he's got, the power he's got, the pace, he's got everything you want in like an athlete of a footballer, which our squad doesn't really have through it. I mean, Tav, I think, was that, but he's 32 now. He's not quite got the legs and the lungs on him that he did, whereas Stirling's power, just sheer power. But the probably more important factor in this is how he can play anywhere, which then ties into what I think is our weakest area of the team, which is probably like the right wing. There's no one else that I can see playing right wing that I'm going to enjoy seeing there, is the most basic way I can put that. Like, I don't really trust McCausland to get the goals and assists. Matondo is hot and cold at best. Scott Wright. And then beyond that, there's just, I don't see who else can sit at the right. I don't know if there's a way Diomande can play in the right kind of thing, but if you're building your like perfect Rangers 11 at this point, Stirling is probably in everybody's, and it's a case of he's so good at anything that he could just slot in anywhere. But I think right midfield, we saw it against Hibs, he won the penalty, had another chance he could have scored. He's so key to what we're trying to do. And yeah, it's massive. I think when Clement came out and said his injury wasn't a bad one, I was so buzzing for that at that point. Like, the fact he could have maybe played at Dundee, could have been in the squad kind of thing, should mean that he's fine given the break we're having here. And for Hibs, I'm hoping he's back in that starting lineup.
Yeah, totally agree there. With you, a couple of comments here, Kieran, before I get your thoughts. KW here says Stirling could be a bulldozer against Celtic, and I love that word. Nice. Because I think that's the what he is. He's an absolute unit. And Chris BC says, no matter the position, Stirling must play. If we could just clone him 11 times, and yes, I'm including him in the goalkeeping position there, that would be ideal. But yeah, Dujon Stirling, or maybe you want to talk about another player before we go, Kieran?
No, I'll stick with Stirling. I think, I don't want to be controversial here, right? I don't think he's as good as what people make out. Now, hear me out here. I've never seen a player so raw with so much potential, as in, like, his flow's quite high. No, I'm not meaning he's a bad player, by all means. I think a lot of the, I think there's a huge hype train, right? He's a starter at right mid just now, but I don't think that means that we don't go and look for a right winger in the summer, right? Yep. But the here and now, Stelling starts for me, right? Stelling starts every single week, but his skill set is very different, as in he's a ball winner high up the park at right wing. He's fast, he's lightning quick. I remember when the players done the sort of YouTube video for the EAFC coming out, and they were talking about the player cards, the Ultimate Team ones. They were saying what stats are wrong, and all the players were like, oh my God, Stelling is so much quicker than they've got him down here. He is lightning. And we've seen it on the pitch, especially that incident against Hibs where he won the penalty and get in behind just after it. So for me, when I say the hype's all the way up here, the ceiling is so much higher than that. He could go on to really do big things, but it's about honing everything he's got, his pace, his power. Maybe could be a wee bit technically better with the ball at his feet. He can be a wee bit looser sometimes, but he's got all the credentials to go really, really high. And I think that's why guys are getting overexcited about him. And I'm really looking forward to see what we can produce. And I think that's where the likeness comes to Calvin Bassey. He was so raw when he arrived, and the upward trajectory of that 6 months post-Christmas under Gio were like nothing I've ever seen a player reach in my life. And Stelling's got the potential to do that too.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you slightly on the height. I can see where you're coming from, but I can't remember ever a player who is a natural right back who has just fitted into central midfield so seamlessly like that. And okay, is there room for improvement? Yeah, but just I've never seen a transition like that. And you could see him getting better and better each game he played in centre midfield. It was the same with being out wide right. Okay, the first time when we saw him on the left against St Johnstone, I thought that was maybe one of the positions you shouldn't play. But you know, we saw him the next game. And I'm sure he had a great cross in against Hearts. It might have been even the one either Dess or scored, or the one we got the penalty for the handball.
You're correct. It was a bit of a deep cross and then a smash.
Yeah, so that's what it is. He's just adapted to every position so well. But listen, I think that's been a really good pod, given it's been an international break. I just want to thank both my guests. So thank you for joining us tonight, Kieran.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thank you very much, Ian.
Thanks, mate. No, I enjoyed that, as always.
Brilliant. So just to let everybody out there know, we'll be back this Sunday at 8:30. I'm not sure who's doing that pod, but I'm sure there'll be lots to talk about. As always, as there's always something to talk about with Rangers. But thank you all to everybody watching and listening out there. And just a wee side note, if you don't know, we're also available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. All these shows got there the next morning after we do them, once they've been tidied up and all that stuff. But listen, take care, everybody, and we'll see you all soon.
Podcast Network.